coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am your host, Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, is the other host of this show, the Jedi Cole Houston. You out there, Cole?
In the land of Hey Kids Comics.
Pretty good. Sid and Marty Krofft will be sending you a cease and desist notice.
Indeed. From the grave.
I'm going to turn this show over now to Cole, because this is his baby. This is his very special issue of Hey Kids Comics. So, Cole, what are you talking about?
Yeah, in fact, this is a part of – we're hitting a block here. It's not really a story arc, but we're kind of doing a block where we're just doing some fun things for ourselves and for people that we know and love from the show, like our Star Trek episode, very much for Catherine, even though she wasn't as steeped in the comics. And this one, like Andy says, it's really all about me. I was – from as far back as I can remember, and even further back, so I'm told, I was pretty much a dinosaur enthusiast out of the womb. I just, the minute I had cognitive abilities and some slight command of the language, I was spewing off cumbersome Latin terms for dinosaurs long before I could be bothered with day-to-day speech. Apparently, Pachycephalosaurus was a personal favorite, and it was not uncommon for me to cry that name out at will, just any opportunity I got, because it does roll off the tongue. I think that was the original name for Dial soap, and then they decided that Pachycephalosaurus would mean the bars would have to be about 9 or 10 inches long, so they went with Dial, that way they could downsize. But no, that we're going to talk about dinosaurs in comics when we did our period pieces issue. We let in with the prehistory of the Earth and discovered rather rapidly, for those of you who listened may remember, that so much of the dinosauria in comics was post-historical.
Sure, yeah, because everybody traveled back to fight dinosaurs. Everybody fights a dinosaur. You're going to find that out in this issue of Hey Kids Comics.
Oh, yes. Or if they weren't traveling back, there was some, very much an Arthur Conan Doyle Lost World of Roy Rama, which, while it does sound like the name of a wrestler, Roy Rama is actually the highest natural plateau in the world. It occurs somewhere in South America where these just huge columns of rock are, as big as office buildings that are topped with entire jungles all their own, just isolated islands.
I preferred Roy Rogers Rama.
Roy Rogers Rama. That was it. I thought you were talking about the Roy Rogers Rama is the only one of these plateaus that can be reached by happy trails.
I'll tell you about a happy trail.
I'm sure you will. And it leads straight to the buffet line.
It does.
And
line up early.
Try the fricassee. But the thing about it is that...
What?
I'm sure that's what you heard. But the thing is that, when not as famous as his Sherlock Holmes, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was fascinated by the prehistoric world because it was fairly new to Victorian people. He was writing in a period where discoveries of dinosaur remains were running rampant. And in his novel, The Lost World, he posited that, on these giant plateaus that man can't reach, there's got to be dinosaurs living up there because they got jungles.
And because, wherever there's a jungle, there's got to be a dinosaur,
it's
right?
Just a natural thing. And, of course, Edgar Rice Burroughs told Marvel they could suck it by inventing the Savage Land about 100 years before Stan Lee.
Right.
known as Pellucidar.
So did he looper suck it? Did he go forward in time to go back in time and tell Stanley to suck it and then go back 100 years? I don't know.
Probably.
Listen,
it's
time
possible.
Is a flat circle. If there's one thing I learned from True Detective, it's that time is a flat circle, and dinosaurs prove that, by the way.
That's so true. But, you know, I think there's that kind of Victorian fascination we talked about with dinosaurs that persists to this day, whether they be the actual article thrust forward in time or visited by intrepid travelers back in time, survivors in a lost world that time forgot, or, you know, some deep earth realm, escapees from the collector's collection, perhaps, who knows. Resurrected from dino DNA or just sort of existing for reasons.
Egg Foo Young probably made. What was his name?
Egg Foo.
Egg Foo, yes.
Egg Foo. Hey, well, I know that Dr. Demonicus, was that his name?
Yeah. Dinosaurs.
Yeah, he had some dinosaurs and some dino caterpillars and other crap. But I think, you know, the comics are the. Became the next sort of pulp novel. So if Doc Savage isn't two-fistedly beating up dinosaur breeders, then you move forward into the four-color world of comics, and we're looking for our dinosaurs. We want these creatures because they still fascinate us, and they definitely have a place. And I think one of those places is probably the top unique tourist destination in the DC Universe.
Oh, Monster Island?
Is it Monster Island or Dinosaur
Island? Dinosaur Island. It is
Dinosaur
Island.
Yeah. So, you know, they were basically telling John Hammond to suck it because they didn't even have to do any work.
Here's the thing that always gets me about Dinosaur Island, Cole, is how many superheroes have ended up, or you know, Sergeant Rock and Easy Company or the Blackhawks or the Justice League or... whoever it is, they end up on Dinosaur Island, and it's always so surprising that they end up... They've all been there, yet they're all like, oh god, there's a Dinosaur Island. None of them are like... like, Green Arrow isn't like, oh, for shit's sake, it's Dinosaur Island again. God, can somebody...
Yeah, every time they go back, they're surprised there is a Dinosaur Island. How... did no one write it down or take a picture?
I'm glad I stashed this, this dual prop biplane here the last 8 times I was here so that I could get off of Dinosaur Island.
It's worse than Wrong Way Wainwright from the damn Gilligan's Island. In fact, it was much Dinosaur Island Gilligan's Island have in common that people keep showing up there.
Right, right. And
nobody
they can leave
knows
any
it's
time
there,
they want, and they just choose not to.
Yeah, well, you know, nobody knows it's there yet. Somehow, it's... everybody winds up there.
Well, I think my favorite instance of Dinosaur Island was in Final Frontier. Not Final Frontier. New Frontier. God, no. Final Frontier was a different
the last
movie.
Issue.
Yeah, that's a different movie. Was in New Frontier by DC where Sergeant Rock and his company get stranded on Dinosaur Island. There's this running theme through the entire first book as systematically all of... I think it's Easy Company for Sergeant Rock, isn't it? I'm not crazy.
It is, in fact. Yes, indeed. Okay. In fact, it is Easy Company because every chance they get, if somebody so much as bitches or gives a sideways glance or turns their nose up at the, you know, the grub and their rusted old cans of food, somebody in that whole outfit has to mention nothing's easy and easy.
Right, right. And but they systematically get picked off on Dinosaur Island, I believe by one T-Rex. Just systematically hunts them into extinction.
Ravenous man-killer, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty great as they try to, like, as they go insane or try to kill them, you know, and there's this... The thing about New Frontier, and Cole and I were talking about this earlier this week, is it's bright and shiny, and we said it was Golden Age, right? It was all based in the Golden Age of comics. Maybe early Silver, but mostly Golden Age. But as you know, as you read it, you're like, good God, this is dark. Because what they're doing is they're showing you kind of what was happening behind the scenes in a Elseworlds sort of way, while you're getting this the victor writes history storylines in your classic books. This is what's happening behind, was it Wonder Woman freeing all the Korean women from the Korean prison camps, and having them kill all the men, and you know, and then this is happening, and there's just one T-Rex just systematically destroying, and there's, you know, crosses made out of tree branches out front. The dog gets it at some point. When does the dog get it? In New Frontier, apparently. So yeah, that's my Dinosaur Island moment. I'm just like, Lord.
What's wonderful about that is, what better way for Sergeant Rock and Easy Company to go out? You know, the two choices are either the inspiration for a remake of Inglourious Basterds, or they take the Star Spangled War way out, because Star Spangled War stories seems to be replete with, like, anytime the sales were down, I guess they just went back to Dinosaur Island.
Well, yeah, you got to have something during peacetime, and what do you get during peacetime? Dinosaurs.
Well, that's right.
I saw that new King Kong movie. I know how it works.
Yeah, that's how it goes. You just, you know, when nobody's looking, that's why the guy from World War II had to be there.
By the way, I know this is off topic, but I really enjoyed that movie. I really enjoyed Kongpocalypse Now. It was great.
I enjoyed it more than I finally did see that, by the way. I did enjoy it more than I thought. But, you know, this is that Dinosaur Island is a great example of the modern dinosaur tale entering into comics. You know, whoever had the Tarzan license at any given time, it was pretty much a given you were going to make a trip or two to Pellucidar.
Oh, yeah.
Because after a while, there were so many avenues. It was sort of like, you know, in classical mythology, you were supposed to just have to be dead to go into Hades, but there were like 400 different distinct entrances.
Oh, yeah. There was a subway. You just, you know, you had to have a fast pass. You could get on it. Like,
exactly. If you knew who to ask and where to go, there were just like these rather not, I don't know if they were just in places that were so full of caves, nobody cared. It's like, oh yeah, it's a cave, big deal, you know.
Can we talk about the weirdest Dinosaur Island?
Pellucidar becomes, you know, Pellucidar rather becomes the a place to go visit, and so Tarzan is often seen in comics being menaced by, riding on, or savagely butchering a pteranodon or other pterosaur, he or his son Korak just waging war Turok style on dinosaurs. So, you know, Pellucidar is one of those places that I have a fondness for as a longtime Tarzan fan, and it's always fun to see that pop up in comics as well.
So, Dinosaur Island, the weirdest I think it's the first Dinosaur Island was an amusement park, of which Batman shows up on.
Oh, that's right.
And fights. It was Jurassic Park. It was Jurassic Park.
It was so Jurassic Park in that the Pirates of the Caribbean did eat the tourists.
Right? No, you're absolutely right. But little known piece of history, the Tyrannosaurus that Batman fights on Dinosaur Island, the mechanical animatronic, I guess, Tyrannosaurus that Batman fights on Dinosaur Island is the same Tyrannosaurus that ends up in his trophy room in the Batcave.
Exactly. And, you know, for years I struggled with that one. I knew the origin of the penny. I knew, there were a lot of recognizable things like the giant playing card and, you know, things that were obvious. There's actually a Norge full-size freezer that's just full of little trinkets from Mr. Freeze.
Just flowers.
Yeah, he should have got, like, one of those, like, at 7-Eleven, you know, so you could enjoy it without having to open, like,
like, the beer cave. Like, he was just gonna walk in.
But, you know, every time he wants to look at the Mr. Freeze trinkets, he has to open the door to this old fridge that, like, Grandma Wayne bought. And then Alfred comes like, oh, are we refrigerating the entire Batcave, sir? It's like, I'm a multi-billionaire. I think I can spend about 5 kilowatts a week on holding the door open. All right, leave me alone. I'm going to turn to Tom Hanks.
But yeah, that's where that thing came from, which is a pretty cool way into this story that we're trying to tell, which is that somehow... And we talked about it a little bit, I think, during our time period's story arc. But somehow dinosaurs are pervasive even through today's comics, and there's just something about them that really lends itself to being a like you said, a filler nemesis, a filler foe in a lot of comic books.
Oh, exactly. It's just kind of fun that all of a sudden here's a dinosaur.
just there you go.
And Batman.
Well, we knew somebody for Batman. I think the other thing about dinosaurs is you can, unlike people, right? And especially during the Comics Code, unlike people, you can show violence against dinosaurs and get away with it, right?
That is a good point, because dino-on-dino violence was running rampant during the code years.
Yeah, you can't show a guy getting shot in the face, but you can show Batman shooting an arrow into a T-Rex's eye, which might be why they were robotic dinosaurs to begin with, because you couldn't even show that back then. But now all bets are off. You can just slaughter a dinosaur,
oh, yeah,
which has happened so many times from Old Man
Logan. Well, pretty much. I think Frank Cho's Shanna the She-Devil was just, Shanna, an old rifle, a knife, and a whole bunch of soon-to-be-dead velociraptors.
Right. Well, I mean, and if we're talking about dino hunters, Turok the Dinosaur Hunter is definitely at the top of that list.
He certainly holds the title for voted most dinosaurs hunted. It's like those perfunctory awards in Nightmare Before Christmas. where the vampires get an award for most blood drained in one evening. Well, there's a surprise. I bet their vampire hall or their crypt or wherever they live is just festooned with that same prize for the last, I don't know, forever.
I want to talk about Turok for a while, just a little bit, because Turok.
But yeah, he gets the annual award for most dinosaurs hunted.
Because the thing about Turok is prolific character since 1956 level prolific character picked up by Valiant, Valiant picked up a lot of the Gold Key Western publishing stuff later. But all about just killing, just hunting some. And I know we talked a little bit about him. Which show was it we talked about Turok?
I think it was in that prehistory episode, the time that time forgot, because it was a very difficult episode we found to find enough material that took place after during the time period, though right. There were some very significant examples.
Yes. Now, the Valiant comic version, which I had, enough chromium covers on it to bend light around myself and make myself invisible if I wanted to.
A lot of people use those for tanning.
I actually used it for light-based camouflage at some point. It was the fact that it was, he was thrown into like a post-apocalyptic future with dinosaurs that were also cyborg dinosaurs, and he was hunting dinosaurs as well as, but he had bow and arrow, big knife, machine gun, goggles, feather in his hat, BDU pants. Just like calm down, buddy, you're fine. You who are you trying to impress around here? Listen,
he's trying to impress the dinosaurs, because believe me, they're incredibly impressionable.
Magnus likes you already. Solar Man of the Atom. You got, the Eternal Warriors on speed dial. You don't need to impress anybody. But they had, not only did they have all kinds of, weird dinosaurs, but they also had giant praying mantises that he would hunt. They had, I actually really enjoyed Turok. I think Turok was the first Valiant book I picked up, And also, you know, and that's another thing you've got to realize. It beat out it was right up against. It came out the same time as the Reign of Superman came out. Remember the five issues of Reign of Superman, of the Superman. It was sixth. So it was popular. It was a popular comic book too. But it was probably also that it was chromium, and they blinded people on the shelves, and then they thought they were grabbing Reign of Superman when they actually
Yeah, that's true.
It's like getting your eyes dilated at the optometrist. No, yeah, I love Turok. I also love Ulysses Bloodstone. That was another great dinosaur hunter.
Oh, he loved him some dinosaur hunts. And also, I think hunting, working with, occasionally avoiding dinosaurs would be Cadillac Jack Tenrick.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
Xenozoic Tales, and he and Hannah Dundee were running all over the Xenozoic Age, fighting every conceivable species of prehistoric beastie.
Oh my God, you're right. So
right down to, like, you know, if you fell off the boat, you'd be like coelacanths and pteroglottis and trilobites and shit everywhere.
So what was that? I don't even know what that book was about. Like, I don't have any remembrance of that comic book at all.
Yeah, the thing is, I read it. I actually collected it for a while because I'm racking my brain because I actually own the both editions of the portfolio. The they had this wonderful Xenozoic Tales portfolio that Dark Horse put out that was in this massive wooden case with a sliding top, and you had all these incredible prints. And then they came out with what they called the Working Man's Edition. It was the same prints, not on as high a quality paper. Mark Schultz was the creator. And Xenozoic Tales took place in the world gone mad that was known as the Xenozoic Age. And essentially, I think it just time went wild. And all of a sudden, you know, after all these natural disasters, there are dinosaurs and prehistoric mammals, and that the effectively humanity had to, there were so many natural disasters that what's left of humanity emerges on a world full of dinosaurs and junk. And apparently like Jack Tenrick liked to make souped up automobiles and go around with rifles and shoot dinosaurs and stuff.
Do you think there was a real big, you know, like a boom market for fixing up old Cadillacs after no, you forgot the most important part of this, which is that not only does he remake cars, you know, redo cars old and soup up old Cadillacs, but because in this post-apocalyptic nightmarescape that they live in, there are no oil refineries, he's figured out a way to make them run on bat guano or dinosaur guano.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, that's right. So, like, just it, like nitrogen-fueled.
Right.
Like pre-World War I nitrogen extraction. Because there's literally, I kid you not, prior to World War I, a little fun fact here, there were certain countries in South and Central America that would actually, there were actually wars that broke out over access to bat guano.
Really?
Because prior to the discovery of extracting nitrogen from the air itself, bat guano used to be as worth its weight in gold.
Wow, that's awesome.
Because that was one of the primary sources of nitrogen, and in fact, prior to the discovery of the extraction of nitrogen, there were people who were afraid that the earth was, that mankind would die out because we couldn't, there wouldn't be enough sources of nitrogen to keep modern agriculture alive.
That's crazy.
Crazy fun fact there. But they had just what was fun with Xenozoic Tales for a dinosaur enthusiast was seeing that Mark Schultz is obviously a dinosaur enthusiast because he would cull the width and breadth of species.
Okay, that's awesome.
And even, you know, create a few of his own. But, you know, to utilize different types of animals that most people weren't thinking of was pretty cool. And of course, apparently, I'd forgotten he had a Jack himself had a an Allosaurus that he raised from a baby. I don't know what you call it, like a cub, named Hermes, who was apparently a handy, not a bad thing to have your own Allosaurus, you know.
Right, for sure. Oh man, I'm just I love dinosaurs. So I want to go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to point out that, interestingly enough, I'd forgotten that Kitchen Sink published 1987 to 1996, a rather sporadic, 14 issues in that time, print run. It was retitled Cadillacs and Dinosaurs in 1990-91 for Marvel, and then Topps Comics picked up the title.
I'm way more familiar with the Cadillacs and Dinosaurs title than I am Xenozoic.
Yeah, I think that Marvel recognized that, you know, Xenozoic Tales may play in over at Kitchen Sink. I think I said Dark Horse earlier. You know, Dennis Kitchen may get it, but the rest of the population won't. And Cadillacs and Dinosaurs seemed an ideal choice of title, because that's pretty much most of what was going on there was big ass Cadillac with accoutrements and lots and lots of dinosaurs.
So there's one story in particular that jumps to my mind. Do you remember Wednesday, the Wednesday comics thing that DC put out?
I didn't actually see any of them myself, but I do know the title.
There's one that I need to get you, and I might have it because I have the giant collector's collected edition. It's like the giant newsprint size hardbound collector's edition, but then again I also have a bunch of the ones that hit hit, you know, from Diamond that hit distributor shelves, the direct direct sent ones. But there's one that, there was a Hawkman story in there. It was the art's beautiful and the story was great, but there's one issue in particular where, and I had forgotten about this until I was doing the research for it, where Hawkman, and it was told episodically, right? It was told as a comic strip, like you would get in an old, you know, in the newspaper, where you would have one page per week. So you would buy these things, and it would have like eight stories, and you would get basically one page per week, big pages, big giant.
Okay, so it was like the, just reading your dailies or your weekly funnies.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, you had a Batman one that was really good. You had a Green Lantern one that was really good. You had a Hawkman one that was really good. They overall, they were all pretty amazing. And it's something that I would like to talk about more on the show now that I've remembered that it's there. And there's too much to talk about at all times, but I'm sure we'll find ways to pull it in. But there was one particular Hawkman in this, you know, the Savage Land type story where Hawkman was being attacked or was trying to drive out a T-Rex from wherever he was. So he picks a fight with a T-Rex and he gets the shit knocked out of him, just straight up beat down by a T-Rex, like flies in with his, you know, nth metal mace and the T-Rex just beats him senseless, bites him, throws him. But he lures the T-Rex out to the beach, right? Out of the forest into the beach, then lures him into the ocean, at which point, you know, he tags in a certain man.
A certain Jedi Cole favorite.
Which comes out of the water riding his giant seahorse and commanding the deaths to fight for him. So there's a great panel, which you can find online. I think we'll probably post it, because it's, and I've got it here somewhere. I'll send it over to you, Cole, where it's Aquaman riding the seahorse down at the T-Rex's feet. There's a giant squid all wrapped up in his legs, and then on the T-Rex's tail there's just a shark hanging from it out of the water, just in the air. Like, that's rad. Shark, squid, Aquaman, Hawkman fighting a T-Rex in the ocean is about the best thing you could ever ask for in a comic book. That's the reason comic books were made, ladies and gentlemen, is to see Hawkman, the man of, you know, you got your sky-based and your sea-based fighting a T-Rex in the middle of the ocean, which I don't imagine a T-Rex is too functional in the ocean. Cole, you would know better than I do.
You know, the funny thing is that I always looked at animals like the T-Rex as a kid. You know, I had the little Marx dinosaurs, the army men of prehistory.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I thought we lost me. No. Yeah, they were like just, you know, uniform color plastic, different dinosaur species, and you'd usually wind up having 3 or 5 or 10 of the same animal, oftentimes in different bright or dull colors, depending on, I guess, whatever was flowing over the Marx factory. But I always looked at the Tyrannosaurus Rex, as I'm looking at this wonderful picture of the very battle.
So good. It's so good.
But they, you know, the T-Rex was always the one that, you know, you would go to the ocean or to the water to escape. William Stout, his wonderful book, The Dinosaurs, posits something that is also posited in the original Jurassic Park novel by Michael Crichton, and that is that the Tyrannosaurus Rex is ideally suited for swimming.
Because of his very strong hind legs?
No, because of the configuration of an enormous head and a very long tail.
Oh.
So by simply relaxing its body, it could just sort of undulate like a snake with a lot of excess baggage underneath.
We call that the James Earl Jones where I'm from.
Wow. I think everybody calls it that, except in the Midwest.
Conan callback.
Yeah. He raised that snake. But
I bought that wig.
But not for your Thulsa Doom cosplay.
Oh my god. Can you imagine? I'm doing it. I gotta do it at some point now. Thulsa Doom cosplay with a giant, like one of those giant stuffed snakes you can get at the zoo.
Oh yes, that'd be perfect.
It's better than my Beastmaster giant Batman hanging in the tree cosplay that I've been working on.
But I don't think the Tyrannosaurus is ideally suited for the surf.
Well, not for surfing, for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, if it wanted to, like, slide down into a river to menace the baryonyx or something, it could probably get away with that. But if it, you know, if you go down to the beach, it's just hard to get your footing if you don't weigh 7 tons.
Listen, there's very little that's funnier in my mind than a surfing T-Rex. All right, let's just.
But you might have been able to see a surfing T-Rex in the anthropomorphic dinosaur series, Dinosaurs for Hire.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if they ever had any like Baywatch ripoff issues, but Dinosaurs for Hire was one of the during a heavy period of anthropomorphization the one still standing, of course, is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and probably Usagi Yojimbo. But, you know, dinosaurs were fair game as far as animal species went. And Dinosaurs for Hire was an action series featuring dino guys, you know, who, as in any anthropomorphic series, be it Albedo Anthropomorphics or Omaha the Cat Dancer or Cars, you know, or what was that, Zootopia?
Yes.
Zootopia got away with it because they kind of explained why everybody's a different species, because they always were. But, you know, it always was curious that it's like, how come, like, are all the dinosaur people just, they can only interbreed with themselves? And what will be under the tragic Romeo and Juliet tale of a, you know, a, oh god, like a Archaeopteryx.
Where is this going? Where is
I just imagine, like in Dinosaurs for Hire, you know, they should have done like a tale of some Archaeopteryx person who couldn't get married to a Gallimimus person, even though they were largely off that same branch of the tree of life. But you know, that's the law.
The way your brain works horrifies me, man. I don't often think about those things, and I'm glad that one of us does. You do the heavy lifting for everyone else, is what happens.
Well, I have to worry about a lot of stuff, so others don't have to. I'll carry that burden. And But, you know, that was one, the in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, for example, there was an alien species called Triceratons.
Yes, there was.
Who were anthropomorphic Triceratopsians.
I'm not going to try. I'm just going to let that go. No, you're...
Why, I'd love to try Triceratopsians. You should come over and try mine sometime. Ladies and gentlemen, Groucho Marx.
I mean, I love the fact that there was... So the main ones were... what were they? They were Archie, Lorenzo, Reese, and Cyrano. That's what those were the names of the dinosaurs for hire. Archie was a T-Rex that dressed like a mafia hitman. So, like, imagine one of the guys, Mr. Pink, Mr. Blue, Mr. Black...
Billy Bats.
Yeah. And then
go get your shine box.
And then you had Lorenzo, who was a Triceratops who wore Hawaiian shirts a la think more Lethal Weapon style. And then you had a Stegosaurus with one eye, and Cyrano was a pterodactyl. But they all carried giant machine guns. They all carried, you know, oh, they were exactly. All loaded for bear. And it was the late.
With the Hawaiian shirt, you also, with that time period, you're probably also channeling or invoking Miami Vice.
Miami Vice, yes. Yes, well
Which
done.
Which, ironically, that particular dino for hire lived on a boat with a naked guy chained up to it.
Damn it. I was unaware that a Triceratops could grow a mustache like that. But good
wow.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's as lush as the Precambrian forest that they came from.
That's right. He had the Magnum PI thing going on there.
That's right.
Or the Magnum BC in this case.
Nice. That was good. Magnum, yeah. We should work on that. Hey, can we?
Yeah.
Muggerville 7 now has a dinosaur for hire group called
Magnum BC. It's like this dinosaur private dick. That
well,
just,
I think we need to talk about the T-Rex in the room, Cole, because we haven't yet.
No, we haven't.
And the T-Rex in the room is none other than your giant red buddy. The devil dinosaur, my friend.
One of my favorite Kirby creations ever.
And also thumb in the eye to anyone. And we, how many times have we have to talk about this, man? How many times do people get it? Don't come to me talking about how Namor is the first mutant when Devil Dinosaur is the first mutant.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no other, how else does one explain it?
No, you can't. And it's stated. It's stated.
And if you say, well, he was essentially a sauropod, so it doesn't count. Well, let's just say that probably Moon Boy, given the rest of the moon people or whatever the hell they were called.
Moon folk. They prefer moon folk.
Moon folk, yes. My apologies. I was channeling my great-grandfather. Gosh, I'm moon people. he hated from Australopithecine through Neanderthal. He hated prehistoric man. Can't be trusted. But the thing about it is that, you know, Moon Boy is probably a mutant himself, making him a proto-human or a proto-mutant, if you will. So suck it, Namor. Who happens to be a like Cher in that song, a half-breed anyway. There's so many levels in which that Namor shit doesn't work.
Orm runs a bit of traveling show. Orm was DC, so I'm sorry. I was going to go Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves, but...
that's pretty good, though. You know.
I was making a reach. I was reaching.
Reach.
It's been a long week. All right, I'm recording this in my hotel room. Forgive me. I got my Cher mixed in my DC and my Marvel, like a weird devil Oreo, and now I can't get out of it. Now I'm in there too deep. I'm in too deep. Phil Collins. But yeah, Devil Dinosaur has been like super pervasive throughout comics, up to
and
including
in fact,
today.
Exactly. Devil Dinosaur keeps getting reinvented. They won't let him go. whether it's some traveling back in time for a visit like Godzilla did, when they shrank Godzilla to like
that means
to,
yeah
down to fun size. I mean, we could hold like a big like a pet rat, and he just kept getting bigger and bigger, and the FF were called in to send him back in time, and somehow he time bulleted himself back home again. Dum Dum and Jimmy Woo all had to go after Godzilla, who apparently was a dinosaurish in nature in the comics that Marvel published anyway.
We should talk about Jimmy Woo one day, because you want to talk about a weird resume. That guy's got it going on.
Well, he does. I mean, what hasn't the man done? I think at one point he winds up piloting Red Ronin, snatched away from that little shit kid.
Little ingrate.
Yeah.
I want to pilot Red Ronin, you little ingrate bastard.
You know, let me tell you about Red Ronin right here, right now. Okay, you know, there's those giant-ass Star Wars figures and giant-ass Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles you see at the Toys R Us.
Right.
Hasbro, take a leaf from Jack Specific's book. Give us a minimally articulated 36-inch Red Ronin.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That would be amazing.
It would be decent with the 6-inch line. It would be dynamite with the 3 3/4-inch.
Well, there's so many things that they could do that with just to have them. You know, like, and we'll talk about those on the upcoming toy show that we are going to do. But there are so many guys, I mean, that would be perfect for that scale. Just minimal articulation. Just put them out there. You know,
yeah,
that would be awesome.
You could have a devil dinosaur that was to scale with the 6-inch Marvel Legends.
Yeah.
How insane would that be?
That would be fantastic.
Especially, the thing is, if they ever do anything with Devil Dinosaur, please try to mimic the Kirby style. Give him the fence picket teeth. Don't try to make a, Robert Bacher accurate, museum quality reproduction of a Tyrannosaurus that just happens to be crimson. I'm talking about the Devil Dinosaur.
That's right. Also, don't forget, are you familiar with Next Wave?
That rings familiar, but I can't.
There was a period in Next Wave where Devil Dinosaur was the villain. And as that villain, he lived in a metal sphere on top of a mountain, carried a revolver, wore a smoking jacket, and drank champagne. And in one particular, like a James Bond villain, but a giant red dinosaur. And at one point, he throws the champagne glass against the wall and breaks it. And it's the surreality of that panel is just beautiful. Like, just beautiful. It makes me very, very happy.
Oh, and part of your research reminded me, I'd forgotten, in Marvel 1602, there were dinosaurs just inexplicably...
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
Wandering about.
Forgot. Yeah. But they were in the New World, right? Like, where Rohan was.
I think so.
Was.
So I guess that was trying to prove the point of that woman at the daycare who told the kids that Christopher Columbus saw dinosaurs.
Christopher Columbus saw dinosaurs. That's fantastic.
Yeah, she took offense at one of the children suggesting that he saw people and corrected him with that he would have seen dinosaurs.
Oh, that's good.
Because up to about the 15th century, apparently, there were still a few dinosaurs around. I think they died of smallpox or something, cholera. We don't talk about it much.
Well, they brought them blankets, you know.
That's right. Well, they look so cold-blooded.
Moving on now.
Yes, indeed.
One thing that I did find that I think we mentioned in passing during our last episode was there was a book that was put out by 2000. It was a part of a book put out by 2000 AD called Flesh. And I don't think we talked a whole bunch about it, but I think...
No, I don't think we did. And it sounds fascinating from what you told me before the show.
It absolutely does. It takes place in the 23rd century, where we've kind of gotten to the point of where we've destroyed most of the animals on the face of the planet. We live on synthetic food, and they've developed a time travel ability, a time travel technology. And it's sort of become the Wild West of the future, right? You've got these cowboys and cowhands and ranch hands. They start sending them back in time to the dinosaur era to kill dinosaurs and bring back the meat to feed people. So you have this story of man trying to play God by going back in time and killing dinosaurs. So you've got these dinosaur rustlers, and then the ones that are trying to stop it from happening, because it's, you know, first of all, it's inhuman and awful, but number two, because it, you know, it defies their laws. So you've got, you know, you got cowhands and ranchers and rustlers, and then you got sheriffs trying to go back and stop it from happening. But then you've also got these antagonists slash just dinosaurs that take on a life of their own in this book, where you've got like one that they mark with the mark of the beast. They mark it with 666, the mark of the beast. Like, it's so great. I didn't know this existed.
I've been intrigued about that ever since.
I need to pick this up and read it wherever it exists, because I didn't know that this existed. So if you're out there, read Flesh and then tell me how it is, because holy hell, it looks friggin' amazing. Yeah, you've got like the main anti-hero, I guess, is the main, you know, veteran dinosaur hunter. Then you got his rival. And then you've got, you know, the corporations, but you've also got like Old One Eye, which is a matriarch of a pack of tyrannosaurs. Oh, don't easy. Big Hungry, Gorehead, Satanus, which is a cloned dinosaur. Golgotha. These are all dinosaurs that, you know, it's, oh my God, it looks so amazing. It looks like something out of AD, to be honest. It looks like something that they would come up with, because it's nothing. Like, there's a character in it called Preacher Sunday who believes that the Cretaceous period is actually hell. So, like, that's his, you know, that's his crazy religious bent, is this preacher that thinks that they keep sending people back to the Cretaceous period, and he believes he's actually sending them to hell. Which is fantastic. How brilliant is that? That you can't get better than that. You just can't get better than that.
There may be one place where you can get better than that.
Okay, bring it. What do you got?
Apparently a one-off character. I'm trying to determine from what comic. It was a DC comic.
Okay.
That featured a Nazi dinosaur.
What?
Known as Tyrannosaurus Reich.
Yeah, oh God, that hits me right in the place where I know what that is. And I can't place it. Why can't I place it?
Yeah, from what little I'm finding imagery-wise, I don't recognize the other players in the scenes. One of which appears to be a gigantic cat.
It was in Major Bummer. Do you remember Major Bummer?
No.
So DC, it was a humor book. Doug Mankey and do you remember John Arcudi?
Well, yeah, I think so. The art is incredible.
And it's a humor comic that only lasted 15 issues, but it's just your standard big guy with a gun.
Okay.
That was around that time. You had a lot of them happening. I think more Hitman than Superman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's where.
What's amazing is Jack Boots fitted for the unique ankle and toe configuration of dinosaur legs. That's some pretty impressive stuff there, and his gigantic Nazi submachine gun.
So basically, not only was Tyrannosaurus Reich a supervillain and Major Bummer, but he comes from a dimension inhabited by Nazi dinosaurs.
Yes, I saw that, because it's like when you go to Dinosaur Island, you can't go to Dinosaur Island and not see vampire, or not see...
Nazi dinosaurs.
Nazi dinosaurs. Oh, dear Lord. Another one, a little tidbit I thought that was wonderful, is that the tar pits in Sin City have dinosaurs around them.
Oh, yes.
Ray Miller cites that he just wanted to draw dinosaurs.
So that's how he got it.
Yeah, he figured out a way to draw some dinosaurs.
So we got to wrap this up. So do you have any favorite dinosaurs that we haven't talked about? Do you have anything that you want to mention? Is there any final dinosaur thoughts?
I think this character was mentioned because, you know, being a dinosaur nut, when my little brother was collecting Spider-Man, there was a story with the Lizard, who is, of course, a favorite Spider-Man villain of mine anyway. And I believe at the time a new character known as Stegron, who was like the dinosaur man. And I always thought that Stegron was an interesting character because he just, you know, like the Lizard, he just took on, he was this orange Stegosaurus man. No, you can look up Stegron. He's just they actually did a piss poor action figure of him.
What?
During one of the Toy Biz, expanding the Spider Verse era,
yeah,
where you got like the god awful Typhoid Mary and a bunch of other figures. But there's actually you can find a Toy Biz Stegron. I would love to see Stegron done as a build a figure. More akin to what you see in that particular story, especially because it's kind of a cool looking character, like this, you know, orange Stegosaurus guy in battle shorts. And then of course a personal favorite is Sauron from the X-Men.
Oh, we've got to talk if we're gonna. Yeah, we've got to talk about
Sauron, as I thought it was, and I figured out later. No, he's supposed to be named for Sauron from Lord of the Rings, and they say as much in the comic that apparently that when.
Do they really?
Yes, in the I think it may have been the Spider-Man and the Savage Land story, this little two-parter that originally appeared in Marvel Fanfare. They speak of the of Marvel's Carl Langstrom, whose name I can't remember. So he effectively becomes Sauron is Marvel's Man-Bat.
That makes so much sense. I didn't. Okay.
Okay, but I mean, to me, there's nothing more perfect in all the world of comics than an anthropomorphic pteranodon in a loincloth with a gun belt.
That's fantastic.
Sauron can fly around, and I think he has a sonic scream and hypno eyes, but he's packing heat.
One of my favorite quotes ever was from Sauron, and it was a Spider-Man quote that I'm trying to pull up right now as we close the show. That was it absolutely sums up Sauron in every feasible possible way. Something to the effect of oh, there it is. he says let me find it. Oh, come on, let me find it. Sorry guys, I'm looking. I'll
oh, and I think I know the quote you're talking about, because I think I stumbled on that very panel, and I want to use that for
so Spider-Man says, you know, or Sauron says, with DNA we liberated from the grave desecration you call a museum, I have perfected the Sauronization process. You write
wow.
Paper puppets will be given forms befitting Earth's dominant species. And Spider-Man responds, you can rewrite DNA on the fly, and you're using it to turn people into dinosaurs? With tech like that, you could cure cancer. And Sauron says, I don't want to cure cancer. I want to turn people into dinosaurs. Which is perfect. It's absolutely perfect. Oh, Sauron, the most prolific of bipedal weirdos.
Sort of comes back into existence in that Marvel Fanfare story. He can't help but say, look upon me, ye humans, and despair.
Sauron's a cool-ass character.
He really is. He's fun. One of my Paul Smith, I believe, was the artist on the Marvel Fanfare issues, or at least most of that story, where they're down in the Savage Land and wreaking havoc, and there's some woman with like the chicken hairdo going on. It's basically Storm, Angel, and Kazar, and Zabu, and it's wonderful, amazing art. And then there was I think for the Marvel, what was that? Marvel Masterpieces.
Oh, yes.
The Joe Justko Marvel Masterpieces. There's a wonderful card of Sauron.
It's fantastic. Damn it, so good.
One of my all-time favorites right there, because I'm just... All right. As you can tell, I'm silly for dinosaurs. I love it when dinosaurs show up in comics. It was kind of like, you know, as a kid, anytime something Star Wars was, you know, like, oh, look, here's a bunch of stormtroopers in a parade. What? Where? Because back in the 70s, they were fairly rare. But anything with dinosaurs, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and I'm glad that we got to do this show for you, and we didn't even get into, like, Wonder Woman fighting dinosaurs, or, you know, X-Men fighting dinosaurs 800 different times, or, you know, the thing
Or the Savage Land. I mean, any story in the Savage Land, if you couldn't get Devil Dinosaur, go to the Savage Land.
Right. Or all, you know, seriously, the X-Men in every... Because they would go to the Savage Land all the time and just hang out and then be shocked when a dinosaur would show up and try to attack them. Nobody's shocked that this dinosaur is attacking you right now, okay? No one is shocked. So let's get out of here on Technophage, and then we'll call it a day. We at least have to mention the fact that Technophage exists in the world.
I don't think you could do this story justice without mentioning.
Right. So Technophage was a hyper-evolved T-Rex. I believe he was a T-Rex, wasn't he?
I think he was. There was also, I mentioned earlier that nobody ever gives any love. You know, once the Velociraptor fell into common coinage, the Deinosuchus was largely unseen. Apparently, I mistook the was it Runaways?
Yes.
Dinosaur Old Lace apparently is technically a Deinosuchus. So good on them for bucking pop culture and going with a more obscure raptor species.
Yeah, so created and spun out of Neil Gaiman's Mr. Hero, the Pneumatic Man, which we talked about briefly about 7 issues ago. Technophage, otherwise known as Henry Phage, because if you're a hyper-evolved dinosaur, you need a human people
yes,
name.
Yes, one does want to be approachable.
That way
it gets within, like, snapping distance of your talons and feet and teeth.
He has survived for 65 million years and is basically the Doctor Doom of dinosaurs. And he has an entire, you know, series of comic books about him, basically kind of running a Blofeldian network of hypercrime as a, like a smoking jacket wearing smart T-Rex.
That's impressive stuff.
Yeah. So why don't we get out of here on him? Why don't you plug us up and give us your final thoughts, and then we'll press on into this good night and be joined next week for what show?
Next week we are going to be joined by our good friend and my co-host on the Rancor Pit and the Rancor Pit Live, none other than Eddie Medina.
The Michael McDonald to our Doobie Brothers.
That's right. And an issue of this show that could only be called "Hey Turtles."
That's so good. I can't wait to talk Turtles.
We talked about the turtle phenomenon, but we've never really concentrated solely on the turtles. So this is my little gift to Eddie Medina.
He's done so much for us. It's time we get back.
That's right. It's a turtle-centric issue of this very show.
So where can people find us? What are you up to? What are you and Eddie up to out there?
Oh, good Lord. Well, you can find us here at the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at the Jedi Cole Universe at gmail.com. You can also write to me at Isle of Toys, A-I-S-L-E of Toys, at gmail.com, because that Isle of Toys is my new show on deep on the DallasOnAir.com, which will be the third Sunday of every month on DallasOnAir.com from 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Central. As you listen to this, in 2 days, if you're listening to this on Friday, in 2 days, the Isle of Toys second episode will go live with the an exploration of the rise of the action figure, which you know is something we love here at the JCU. And that's immediately followed by the Rancor Pit Live, which is the first and third Sundays of every month, preceded on the third Sunday by my show, preceded on the first Sunday by Eddie and his wife Colleen's show, Figments. They now have Figments as a live show. And that's over at DallasOnAir.com. You can look for our tweets on Twitter, at the Jedi Cole U. My Isle of Toys, what do you call that? Instagram. So yeah, I've actually been using that far more than my Twitter account, sad to say. But please feel free to join up on my on the Isle of Toys Twitter account. I occasionally put some fun little pictures up there and let you know what's going on with that show. And, that's the bulk of it, I think. And I believe that you are running our, you have the Hey Kids Comics.
I absolutely do. If you just search hashtag HKC, you can find us posting pretty much every day, or at least trying to post every day on there, getting some candid stuff on there, putting a lot of stuff, a lot of kind of behind the scenes of the show on there. Also, the Twitter page is alive and well and kicking. So if you want to get on there and interact with us on Instagram, if you want to interact with us on Twitter or even on Facebook, you can absolutely do that. And also visit JediCole.com, because there's a lot of stuff out there as well that you can get into. With all that being said, Cole, do you have any final thoughts on dinosaurs? I know you have lots of final thoughts.
I have all kinds of thoughts on dinosaurs. But let's just suffice it to say that I'm never happier than when dinosaurs appear in comics, no matter what the era.
That's right. All right, buy, collect, enjoy your comics, ladies and gentlemen. We will be back next week to talk about those heroes on a half shelf that we all love.
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Heroes on a Half Shelf.
Turtle power.